Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 15, Number 9. In the last edition of Clinical Review, my topic was minerals and their importance in human nutrition. Minerals are what we are made of. Minerals are chemical elements required by all living things and are classified as one of the four groups of essential nutrients. All minerals can be toxic if overconsumed for long periods, even those that are essential to life. Keep the overconsumption in mind, not underconsumption, because that leads to the same symptoms. This is why we have guidelines for dosage. As with vitamins, demand for various minerals can and does vary from individual to individual. Always keep this principle in mind. In functional medicine and holistic sports nutrition, the amount of virtually every vitamin and mineral recommended to prevent disease, optimize health, and extend life is greater than what convention advocates. I consider their standards to be incredibly conservative and missing the beat in many, many ways. But if you take the minimum amounts that they advocate, you certainly won't die of some of the classical deficiency diseases. Many vitamins can operate in the absence of certain minerals. There are about 20 essential minerals, 8 of which are macro minerals, meaning they are needed in amounts greater than 100 milligrams daily, like magnesium. Those that remain are considered trace minerals or micro minerals, like vanadium. These elements are required in much smaller amounts, but although the amount of each one required is less than 100 milligrams daily, they remain equal in significance in terms of biological function. Make sure you take a good, well-rounded mineral supplement daily, as minerals are often overlooked, disregarded, or forgotten. On this edition of Clinical Review, my topic is PSN number 35, the importance and safety of protein. Every CSNA student and grad knows how important protein is, but we must continue to emphasize its importance because we live in a carb-crazed society where people are consuming way too many carbs, mostly bad, way too much of the wrong kind of fat, and when the numbers are scrutinized, not nearly enough high-quality, non-denatured protein rich in biological value. So how much protein does a human being need? The best way to find out is to first calculate a person's lean mass through body composition assessment, not their total body weight, their lean functional mass, then determine their athletic class according to activity, movement, intensity of exercise, frequency of exercise, body type, stress load, and lifestyle. As a reference, look for CHI daily protein requirements chart located in the charts category to the left under articles on the CHI website. Many people are convinced for whatever reason, mostly propaganda, deception, myth information, and nutrition cults, as I think of them, that protein is harmful and needs to be avoided at all costs, especially animal protein. But let me make one point perfectly clear. Consuming optimum amounts of clean, non-damaged protein from both animals and plants does not and will not increase our risk of cancer, premature death, or heart disease. In fact, the opposite is true. Let's think about the Costanza principle here. What people think in the masses is wrong. The opposite is true based on logic. But we do have to make it clear to people that there are two types of protein. Simply put, the good and the bad. For example, fresh wild ahi tuna consumed raw as sashimi, it's an excellent source of protein. Fatty acids, it hydrates the body, it's alkaline forming. But let's change the state of that same tuna. And now we've got oxidized, acidic, sodium-rich, and overcooked tuna in a can. So this later version we can all do without. There's no comparison. You've got something great, you can destroy it and turn it into something not so great. If we continuously overconsume damaged denatured protein, it can certainly cause damage and can theoretically shorten our health span. But this is also true with any food that has been altered in a negative fashion, because consuming rancid denatured food increases inflammation in the body and increases the rate of cellular oxidation. I mean, there's evidence that ground up oxidized soybeans causes more inflammation than meat. But people will eat that instead of meat, thinking that it's somehow plant-based and therefore superior. You have to be really specific about what you're talking about and consider the format. But on the other hand, if we consume optimum amounts of super high quality lean protein, preferably wild tissue protein or whey protein isolate that's manufactured correctly with health in mind, we can easily supply our biological demands, improve our health and function, and avoid living in a depleted negative nitrogen state. So keep that nitrogen, that N-word in mind here throughout this discussion. For optimum performance, we have to eat enough of the right kind of food to build a healthy and strong internal foundation. It takes about 6 months to renew our entire muscular system, and each year, approximately 98% of the molecules in our bodies are completely replaced. So the question that follows is, what are we replacing these molecules with? Pop-Tarts and cheeseburgers? This is where the quality of the food we eat and the information flow it provides definitely becomes relative. Remember, food isn't about calories. That's moot. That's old dogma. That's irrelevant now. It's about streams of data flowing in from the outside world and creating signals that ultimately influence gene expression. Each of us needs approximately 300 to 500 grams of protein per day to biosynthesize the building blocks of our internal organs, muscle fibers, skin, hair, transport proteins, hormones, immunoglobulins, enzymes, etc., etc., just to maintain our biological framework and life support systems. About 75% of this quantity is recycled from within the body by deconstructing dying or damaged cells and tissues. This is a good thing. This process is called catabolism, converting amino acids and nitrogen groups into newer functional proteins and building them up or constructing them is known as the opposite of catabolism, which is anabolism. The other 25% of the protein we need is obtained from exogenous sources. Exogenous means outside. So this is where we need to be conscious of and calculate the ideal amount that we need based on our lean mass and activity level. We have limited internal resources to utilize, turnover, and recycle. You can't obtain all of your essential amino acids from inside of yourself. This is why we need to consume high-quality, non-damaged protein to ensure an optimum intake of these essential amino acids. Essential means needed for life. Each time we run, lift, swim, or play any sport vigorously, or throw the weights around and push really hard, we threaten the economy of the body and traumatize our neuromuscular, skeletal, and immune systems. The fact is that training hard depletes us. Stress increases. We release cortisol and adrenaline, and this takes a toll. In actuality, very little protein is required for the actual growth and remodeling process of muscle because muscle grows very slowly when correctly stimulated. What really counts is the impact of the hard physical work that it takes to remodel the muscle, and the toll it takes, and how this impact literally drains the nitrogen and amino acid pool from within our bodies. Remember, we're all athletes engaged in the sport of living, and we want to be well. At least I do. I'm not talking about bare minimum survival. I'm talking about living and thriving at the highest possible level of form and function. But sadly, the world is fixed at the wrong end. It seems as if all of the modern nutrition standards used as a reference for food are created from the lowest possible common denominator. I mean, what does it take to prevent scurvy, beriberi, or pellagra as opposed to Alzheimer's or cancer? For many, this minimalist standard explains why we think the way that we do when it comes to nutrition. Someone might say, well, I eat better than that person who might be eating at the lowest possible level. Instead of comparing how they eat to a science and health-based objective standard. So if somebody else is following this science and health-based objective standard, why not compare yourself to what they're doing instead of comparing yourself to what everyone else is doing that makes you look better? That's just a form of situational ethics. You got to reach for the top by elevating your consciousness towards that end. Typically, we think that no matter what we eat will sustain us. We're just going to get what we need no matter what we eat, and that's just the way it is. Plus, we have this medical safety net in the background that will rescue us when we fall off the high wire of life. But this is not a good way to think. At least that's not how I think. If you walk on the high wire of life, and we all are, as if there's no safety net, now this is how I think. This is how Tracy thinks. There's no safety net below me. I'm walking across Niagara Falls on a tightrope, and there's nothing to catch me if I fall. Now, can you imagine how careful I need to be? But if there's a net below, doesn't matter. Who cares? Make a mistake. It'll catch you. You see the difference? If your consciousness is devoted to truth and independence and responsibility and love for life, you're going to walk on this wire because we're all walking the wire. Okay, we're going to walk on the wire as if there's nothing below to catch us. And this forces you to pay attention. And it also keeps you in check mentally. This attitude protects us from ourselves because we are our worst enemies or our best friends, depending upon our attitude. And this attitude makes us more responsible. The key regarding our own salvation is self-mastery. And self-mastery depends on learning as much as we can about life and nature. And of course, this includes the study of nutrition and fitness science and the science of our existence. Now, here are five basic reasons why athletes need more protein. Number one, in addition to water and a variety of electrolytes such as potassium, magnesium, or chloride, nitrogen is also lost through sweat. We don't just lose electrolytes when we sweat. We actually excrete amino acid byproducts like ammonia and nitrogen through our pores. This is based on analytical research that is able to identify an increase in nitrogen excretion in test subjects. Number two, protein loss occurs through compression hemolysis. This is one variable that few know anything about. Compression hemolysis occurs when erythrocytes, or red blood cells, are actually crushed through intense muscular contraction. This causes the release of hemoglobin, the formation of free radicals, and a consequent loss of protein and iron. In long-distance running, it's referred to as foot strike hemolysis, which can explain why marathon runners and triathletes, for example, lose both iron and protein, why they become anemic, and why they lose muscle. I train with enthusiasm. My workouts are heavy and hard. In fact, sometimes they're brutal, and I'm completely exhausted at the end. And thank good for the restorative process. And sometimes, like after a heavy set of squats or bicep curls, I can see broken capillaries on the surface of my skin. This is evidence of hemolysis. And when they disappear, my body's adapting and healing, and that's good. I know that I have the capacity to heal. But here's what I did. I crushed capillaries and red blood cells through strenuous activity and heavy contraction. You don't have to do it in the gym. You could be lifting bricks or working on a job site and really giving it. And that's going to put certain pressures and stresses on cells and tissues and organs that is going to lead to this effect on occasion. You've got to have backup when this happens because this is what leads to disease long term. But this is also why I take antioxidants, focus on excellent hydration, and consume good quality protein on a regular basis. Number three, up to 5 to 10% of an athlete's total energy supply is derived through the breakdown and oxidation of protein, and in particular from the branched chain amino acids, leucine, isoleucine, and valine. Many athletes push muscle contraction to the point of muscle glycogen deficiency. This means that within their liver and muscles, the energy that we refer to as glycogen or human starch is gone or almost gone. This forces amino acid reserves or muscle tissue or both to be used as a secondary source of fuel. This is why taking protein before and after training is so important. It protects muscle from being scavenged in this manner. Exercise also causes muscle to release large amounts of alanine and glutamine, which are mostly excreted from the body and lost. So again, we see that protein consumption is essential as a preventive measure to compensate for this phenomenon. Number four, heavy exercise elicits a stress response. Exercise is a form of stress. It raises plasma cortisol levels, and cortisol is a catabolic hormone. Although cortisol has biological virtue, and it definitely has merit, that's why it's inside of us. It's a product of evolution and our genes and our makeup. but it does inhibit the uptake and transfer of amino acids into muscle cells, and it does stimulate a direct proteolytic effect. Proteolytic means to break down, to cause the demise of, like how an enzyme breaks down protein into subsequent amino acids. But all of this activity basically increases the rate of protein turnover and creates a greater need for it. Protein isn't just about building muscle. It's a safeguard that protects the entire body from the influence of training and the impact of life, disease, stress, infection, and emotion. All of these forces are catabolic and lead to increased nitrogen excretion. This is why people can lose significant mass right before your eyes when they're stressed out financially, going through a divorce, fighting cancer, or some weird, strange autoimmune disease, or perhaps they've lost someone dear to them. The best thing that we can do is to train and stay true to the art of staying well. Remember, cortisol-induced muscle catabolism is much more likely to occur on a protein-deficient diet or a diet that features plant-derived protein as its exclusive or predominant source. Plant protein is low in biological value. That's a fact. Number five, this last point ties in with number four. Nitrogen balance drops well below optimum levels as a result of strenuous workouts. And there's the key right there. A negative nitrogen balance means that the body has an insufficient intake of high-quality protein and essential amino acids. I mean, I would just love to take a lot of people who think they can survive, which they can survive. I don't know about thrive. I don't know about build muscle. I don't know about being the best. But I'm just convinced that plants alone are insufficient, that there's something in tissue proteins from animals besides the carnitine, besides the creatine, besides the vitamin A, besides all of the nutrients that are in tissue proteins that are not in plants. The quality of the amino acids, how they're strung together and put together, flesh builds flesh, people. That's as simple as I can say it. And of course, we can choose to consume whatever we want. We can choose whatever path that we want. People like to float their own boats, whatever. I like to follow the science. I like to be sure. And I also like to use evidence and outcome to guide me along the way. So I'm going to continuously test myself to reinforce whether or not what I'm doing is right by looking inside of me, testing my performance to see whether I'm putting myself at risk and I have any risk factors that are going to enlighten me to make some changes. Now, although the liver and several hormones control nitrogen use for building muscle, it's impossible to remodel muscle fibers, especially long-term, without maintaining a positive nitrogen balance. The body doesn't need 20-inch biceps to survive. It doesn't need to look like a warrior or a Spartan or a Mr. Universe, although I think that's pretty cool. However, in many athletic activities and different sports, strength and power provides a proven performance advantage. And if you train to create strength and power, which we all should be that important to us, it changes things inside the body. At the recent Summer Olympics in Rio, we all witnessed how much pressure and physical and emotional stress the athletes are exposed to. That process of biological adaptation causes exhaustion. It increases susceptibility to injury. I guarantee that at the end of the games, many of the athletes were completely exhausted, both mentally and physically, and needed plenty of time to rest and recover. During this time, they're actually restoring nitrogen balance. And this nitrogen doesn't come from breathing air. It comes from eating the best protein possible. In part two of this discussion, we'll talk about the safety of protein. We know that protein is essential, so it has to be safe. Otherwise, our species would have died off long ago. We're hunting and gathering species, for goodness sakes. But what happens if we eat the wrong kind of protein or too much? Is it possible to eat too much of a good thing? More on the next edition. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from London actor Joseph Gatt, star of the popular TV series Game of Thrones. I think it's impossible to maintain a good, strong, muscular physique without taking some supplements. Between the protein shakes and the multivitamins that I take, I use C4, the pre-workout mix. I try to keep it as basic as I can, but I think I would shrink and disappear if I stopped taking protein shakes.